So go ahead and take out your notes. And if you haven't noticed already, if this is the first time you're looking at it, you're going to notice that they do look a little bit different. And I'll explain the color coding there on the left-hand side in just a minute. Definitely want you to take out your connection card, fill that out on the front side. There's always a challenge on the back side. If we're not being challenged when we come to the Scriptures, we're probably doing something wrong. So we always look for how God is going to challenge us when we come to the Scriptures. And then on our way out this morning, in the baskets on the back doors, you can put your connection card. If you're giving this morning, you can use your envelope or just put that in the basket out there. We appreciate that. Some of you give online through your bank, use the envelope during the week. That's great. That's awesome. With all of those different ways that the technology allows us to do that anymore, that's very cool. But some of you give on Sunday mornings, and that's fine too, and you use the basket on the way out at the door with your connection card. That's cool. Today, we are coming to John chapter 15, and we're going to do something different. Just because, well, we can. what we're going to do is, you'll see the color coding in there. And normally what we would do, let me put it this way. Normally what we would do is we would come to the passage and you know, I'd read through it and I'd make some comments about some of the important points plus, you know, whatever else I found interesting along the way. And you sit there politely and you listen and you take notes and you respond when I ask you to, and it's a wonderful time. And it's just, you know, just all sorts of awesomeness going on there. today, we're going to do something different. Today, we are going to, in a sense, not quite switch roles, but today you are going to join me in my study. And since we don't all fit in the room back there, we're going to do it here, okay? And we don't have time to do the whole thing from scratch, and so I've color-coded this. I could actually show you a copy of my notes from when I was doing my study, and I color-code, and I've got handwritten and highlighted, and I've got four different pens. Even when I'm sitting in elders' meetings or whatever, it's a running joke anymore. If I bring a yellow pad and four colors of pens, it's just how my brain works. And so you're going to get to see some of the intricacies of my messed up brain today, okay? That's basically what's going on, about as transparent as you can be. So I've color-coded this, and we're going to work through this a little bit. And the goal is still that the Holy Spirit challenges us, but what we're going to do is we're actually going to take this passage and study it through together. So there will be a lot of key areas where I'm just going to stop talking. This is a huge surprise, and it never happens, but I'm going to stop talking with the instruction or the challenge. All right, so what do you see? What do you see in this area? And we can follow the color codes, and what do you see here, and what do you think here? And we're going to do this together, okay? Does that sound all right? I'm going to give you some instructions here, and now here's the one requirement, okay? Because I do want you to participate. I do want you to call out, and you know, it's not going to be a free-for-all, though. Here's the one requirement, okay? I'm sure there are more, but this is the one we're going to start with, all right? Because I want you to participate, and because group study sometimes can devolve into, well, this is what I think, and this is what I think, and this is what I think. What we're really going for is, what does the passage say? Okay, we're looking for, every passage has only one meaning. Okay, it can be applied in countless ways, but there's only one meaning, and that's the meaning that God meant when he wrote it. So that's what we're trying to get down to. So it's possible, I'm not going to promise that it's going to happen, but it's possible that somebody may say something, and I respond, yeah, I don't think so. Or, you know, that's possible, but here's why, maybe not. Okay, so here's the one requirement. Don't be so thin-skinned, or don't get offended if you say something and I might disagree with it. Okay, if you can do that and just say fine, you know, disagree with me. You know, I'm right, you're wrong. It doesn't really matter anyway. Disagree with me. You know, that's my stance, and you know, that can be your stance too. If you can do that and we can have a good discussion this morning, then I want you to pipe up, and I'll bring out some points along the way of specifically where I'm looking for that. And, of course, I've got you know, this isn't because I didn't do any work this week. I do have notes. I've done my own study. So, you know, we're not just going to sit here and stare at each other waiting for somebody to talk. You know, we'll do that. There's a lot of white space on the right-hand side of your notes, if you're following along with the notes. And there are a couple other verses on there. So feel free to take some notes. But if we were going to do this from scratch, let me give you a quick process, because you need to use this in your own Bible study anyway. Let me give you the quick process of how we study a passage, any passage, and the process that we're going to use for the most part this morning. The first thing that we need to do, obviously, is make sure we have a handle on whatever text that we're studying. Okay? Sometimes we want to jump straight to application or straight to interpretation. And we're like, okay, we haven't even really read anything yet. You know, we probably should have a handle on what the text says or the passage says before we try to, you know, unpack it. And frankly, that the best way requires the original languages. So in the Old Testament, that would be Hebrew. In the New Testament, that would be Greek. I don't think most of us are that fluent in that, which means we have to rely on translations. So we need some good, solid translations. I've read this passage in the Greek multiple times, and I read in multiple translations. I think I've got a pretty good handle on this passage, and we're going to work on this together. But sometimes people ask me, you know, what's a good translation to use? So I'm just going to tell you, okay? There are three translations that I would highly recommend at this point in my life. Number one would be the New American Standard, okay? It's a fantastic translation of the Bible, Old and New Testament, the New American Standard. The main problem with it is that sometimes it's just hard to read. They're so focused on getting every individual word translated right. It just doesn't come, you know, good. I tell students this either here at the Learning Center or online or whatever. Good Greek and good Hebrew does not necessarily make good English. Okay, so if all we're doing is translating, and those of you who've studied languages before, you know this. You cannot take one language and translate it over into another language exactly word for word and actually come out with something that's necessarily readable. Okay, sometimes the New American Standard, it is a fantastic translation word for word, but sometimes it's hard to read, and sometimes it's definitely hard to memorize. So it's not necessarily one of the best memory Bibles. The English Standard Version, the ESV, is a pretty good translation. Okay? Not my favorite, but it's a pretty good one. It comes from a good group of translators, a good committee, and that's one that I recommend as well. The one we use here, it's in your notes every week. It's on the screen. I use it for teaching. Is the New English Translation, the NET, the NET Bible. It does not always look for the best word-for-word translation because it wants to look at a phrase sometimes and say, well, how do we make this good English? And so it's good reading a lot of times. It's easy to read. Sometimes not always easy to memorize, and sometimes if you've been here long enough, you'll say, I don't always like the way the NET translates something. That's fine, okay? There is no such thing as a perfect translation. Never going to happen. That's why we need to make sure that we use several good, solid translations. So that's the first step in any process, is to make sure that we understand and we handle the text well. We have a good handle on the text, okay? So we've done that. The second thing is to get a background. We don't want to try to interpret or understand a text just within its little bubble. So we want to make sure we have the background of what's going on. So let me give you the background here real quickly in John chapter 15. Basically, where we're at is the night that Jesus was betrayed. The night that he was arrested. If we were to look at the chapters on either side of chapter 15, we go back just a couple. In chapter 13, Jesus and the 12 disciples are in the room together, the upper room of a house, celebrating the Passover meal. Jesus has washed their feet. Jesus has announced that he is going to be betrayed. He's even pointed out who is going to betray him. Judas Iscariot, even though nobody else really got that. Okay, we look at it 2,000 years later and we're reading it and we know the story and we're like, how can you not understand what he's saying? He pointed him out. And you're all like, who? You know, hindsight, we do the same thing, right? He pointed out Judas. Nobody got it. And then he looked at Peter and said, "Oh, and by the way, you're going to deny me." And of course, Peter denied it. "You're going to deny me three times." "No, I won't." Okay, all right. Then Judas left. So now it's Jesus and the 11 when we go into chapter 14. And Jesus begins to give these 11 disciples who are going to be the apostles that start the church some brand new teaching, some brand new doctrine, some stuff he's never taught before. It's all brand new to them. And he begins to teach what we call, what scholars call, and maybe you see this in commentaries, or even if you have a Bible with study notes, it might actually call it this, the Upper Room Discourse. And it's the last major teaching that Jesus did that we have recorded. And that covers chapters 14, 15, and 16. So our passage in chapter 15 is right in the middle of that. Here's the funny or ironic thing. Only chapter 14 happened in the upper room. Because the last verse of chapter 14, Jesus says, "Get up, let's get out of here." So chapter 15 and 16 are part of the upper room discourse that didn't happen in the upper room. Okay? We're not sure where they were. They could have still been walking out of Jerusalem. They could have been going past the temple. Because on the temple was sculpted into the architecture this huge grapevine. Built into the architecture, and strangers and visitors and guests would come, and as they brought their offerings to the temple, because many of them would come only a couple of times a year because they didn't live in Jerusalem, they would bring gifts, and they would hang these gifts like grape clusters all over this grapevine that was sculpted into the architecture. And so it could be, we're looking at this passage where Jesus is going to call himself the vine. So it could be they're walking past the temple and he sort of points to that and he says, "I'm the vine." It could be that they've already left Jerusalem and they're headed to the garden at Gethsemane where Jesus is going to pray and then be arrested and betrayed. And it could be that they're walking past these vineyards and he stops and he points out the vine and he points out the branches and he points out the fruit maybe that's starting to grow because this is very early spring. Maybe there was no fruit on it at all. Maybe he pointed out some of the branches that had fallen down that the gardener had come by and tied up. And he's going to refer to that in his statement. We don't know exactly where he is, but we know that they're not in the upper room anymore. They're on their way to the garden. And he continues to teach them this stuff, this new teaching, this new doctrine. In chapter 17, the other Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we hear that Jesus prays, "Not my will, but yours be done," right? But that wasn't the whole prayer. In John chapter 17, we get a record of this prayer that Jesus prayed for the whole chapter. And then in chapter 18, he is arrested and betrayed, and he begins his trials. So that's the context of where we're at. Which brings us then in our study to the next couple of steps of actual study of the passage. What we'll have to do is we're going to read through this and we're going to look for some key words. We're going to look for some key phrases, and this is where our color coding is going to help. We're going to look at, I know some of you don't like grammar, we're going to have to look at verbs. Oh man, verbs. All right, we have to look at verbs a little bit because they're key to what Jesus is saying here. And then we've got some other verses here. We're going to see if the rest of the Bible, we can't just interpret it in its own little package. We need to see what does the rest of the Bible say on some of these topics. If we had the time, which we won't this morning, but if we had the time, we would look at other commentaries and other study notes and say, what have other people that we know and trust, what have they taught and written on this? Because we want to make sure that we haven't gone goofy. We can build this great interpretation, and it could be absolutely wrong. And so we look at other people that we know and trust, which I've done. I'm pretty confident we're not going to go heretical this morning, so I think we're safe, okay? And then the very last step in any study of any text is to say, all right, is there an application? Is there something that I need to do because of this? Is there something I need to know because of this? If all we do is we stop at the study part and say, great, now I know all this cool stuff, and we never let it change us, then we have shortchanged ourselves and shortchanged anybody else that we could be sharing this with. So we need to make sure that we do finish up with the application. Okay? So that's what we're going to do this morning. Yeah, I don't remember. We're going to work with the text itself. We're going to do the background, which I just gave you the background. Three would be we're going to look at keywords and phrases and verbs, because verbs are cool. Okay? Keywords and phrases and verbs. After that, what we're going to do is we're going to look and see what the rest of the Bible says. See if it speaks to any of the topics that we come up with. Then we'll go outside the Bible and we'll see if there are other teachers and commentators and study notes, what they've said on it. And frankly, we may read a commentary, we may read somebody, and we disagree with them. And then we have to decide, am I wrong? Are they wrong? Did they see something that I missed? And we have to go back through the whole process again. That's why we're not doing that this morning. And then the last one is we're going to look at the application. What should I do? How should this change my life because I've studied this passage? Okay? Is that good? All right. So here's how we're going to do it. Let me read where our passage is John 15, 1 through 10. I'm going to read straight through that. Normally we would stop and I would make comments along the way. I'm not even going to do that right now. We're just going to read straight through that, and then we'll come back and together we'll make some observations and comments along the way. Sound good? All right, you can participate as much or as much as you want. Here we go. John 15, starting in verse 1. Jesus said, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He takes away every branch that does not bear fruit in me. He prunes every branch that bears fruit so that it will bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it remains in the vine, so neither can you unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. The one who remains in me and I in him bears much fruit, because apart from me you can accomplish nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is thrown out like a branch and dries up. And such branches are gathered up and thrown into the fire and are burned up. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you want and it will be done for you. My Father is honored by this, that you bear much fruit and show that you are my disciples. Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Remain in my love. If you obey my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commandments and remain in his love. That's what he said to the 11 as they were grouped around him, as they were walking toward the garden. So, here's what we're going to do. Let's start with red. Okay? There's, I guess, just win by majority at that point. There I've got five phrases there. Now that we've put it in its context, we've read it, not lots of times this morning, but we've read it, we took our time to read it. We're going to use some color coding here. I didn't want to make you have to figure it all out, so I just give you the color coding. So let's start with red. So you tell me, read those red passages over a little bit, and then tell me, we're just looking for some key words here, that's the very first thing. What are some of the key words?
Remain.
Okay, remain is a key word.
If or unless.
If or unless is a key word.
You.
Okay, you. Mine or me. A lot of stuff in these five little phrases here. If we were to try to categorize, why did I put all of them together in the same color code here? Why did I color code them all the same way in the same category? What would be the thing that sets them apart from all of the other phrases that may have some of these same words? It's conditional, isn't it? That's where this unless or this if comes in. Every single one of these has unless or if. Unless it remains in the vine, unless you remain in me, if anyone, if you remain, if you obey. So We know it has to do with condition or contingency or possibility. Okay? And so if we were to say, okay, if we're talking about condition here, how would, I'm not asking for a big application or anything yet, but what would be the principle, just this broad, broad principle of contingency in this passage? You know what I'm asking for? There's a promise, there's a remain. If, by its very definition, if or unless mean, in any context, means what? Okay, there is something that could happen, which means that Jesus, and this is where you were going with a promise, I think, right? There is something that could happen, and we're going to assume that could happen is good. Let's just go there. That could happen is good. There is something that could happen, but, right? That, what's that? Okay, cause and effect. Exactly. Something Jesus said is in a sense promised to happen or could happen if. Which means what drives whether this happens or not? Our choices, our actions. If you do, then this will. Well, the flip side is if you don't, then this won't. This will not. Okay? Now that we say, okay, I see where these are. Now we can look at the rest of those. If what? What is the number one thing? There are actually a couple of them, but what is the number one thing that Jesus is driving through this entire passage? If what? Remain. That is, and if we were reading this over and over and over, you would see this, and you've already seen this. Maybe some of you have read this passage over and over anyway. I would, if I were in your place, I would have a pen. I would take right now, and I would circle every time the word remain shows up in the entire passage. Hint. Some of you are looking at me like, good for you. That's what you would do. Just look for all of those remain. Every time the remain shows up, just circle that, underline it, just something, make sure that stands out. Then somebody give me a quick count.
Just in the red?
No, all the way through. All the way through. Okay. Somewhere between 10 and 12 is what everybody, 10, 11, 12, right in there. Okay? That's a lot. There are only 10 verses, people. We're talking an average of one time per every verse, on average, Jesus is saying something about remain. Got 11, 12, somebody, okay? All right. Got 12, 11? All right, good. All right, good. We're done counting, okay? Could count for the rest of the day, all right? Is remaining, or remain in what?
In
Him. That's the key, right? Is that the only thing we're supposed to remain in?
And His words.
His love. We're remaining in Him. We're remaining in His love. What is it with His words? His words remain in us. Okay. Now, there may be, and we don't have time to unpack everything this morning, there will be things left unanswered this morning, I'm sure, just because we don't have the time to do that. But it's possible, and you can study this out, and you don't have anything else to do this afternoon, you're just going to go home and keep doing this, I'm sure, right? It's possible that there is a reciprocal for all three of those, remain in Him and Him in us. His words remain in us and we remain in them. We remain in His love, and His love remains in us. It's possible that we could do it that way and maybe even put a little outline together. That's great. We're not going to go there this morning, but I'll just throw that out there for you. What is the one other if that helps us unpack where we're going? Okay, that's the other. That's the other contingency. So, because I mean, what does remain mean? Stay, but we don't know yet in our process of studying. We know that remain is all over the place. Now we come to this first glimpse of what does remain include, and that's in verse 10. Is this last if we obey his commands? Now that makes sense, doesn't it? If I'm not going to obey Jesus, can I really claim that I'm staying with him, remaining in him? It's hard. Does remain only mean obey? Probably not. But it seems to include obey. That's part of the deal. Okay? But if we obey also means that we may not obey. And so he's going to unpack that a little bit too. Okay? All right. I think we're done with red for today. Okay? We'll let you guys unpack that a little bit more later. Let's move on to green, because the next question, or a good question, would be why. He says, if you do this, then there will be some things happen, but are those benefits, are those promises the only reason to do this, or is there a greater goal? Take a look at the green. There's only two of them. And what are these greens trying to point out? Okay, bearing fruit, and this would be results, this would be the goal, this would be the purpose, right? The green is the purpose. And so what key words are we looking for to help us find purpose? So that. He says there, so that it will bear more fruit in verse 2 and then down in verse 8, that you bear much fruit. And there's one more thing too, isn't there? Well, that we bear much fruit and what? Show that you're my disciples. Now, your translation, this is where translations come into play. Because if we had a variety of translations here this morning, or you have it on your phone, there are some translations that don't say, show that you are my disciples, but be my disciples. Bear fruit and be my disciple. Okay, well now, are those the same thing? Not exactly. Okay, so now we have to get into an issue of, is it just that I show that I'm a disciple, or is it that I have to be a disciple? What is be a disciple? Does that really have anything to do with the text? So in the NET translation here, it decided, the committee decided that showing that you're a disciple fits the context better. Let me throw it out to you. Why would they, I mean, we're not in their heads obviously, but why do you think that they would say that showing that you're my disciple is a better fit in the context than being my disciple? It includes being, if you're showing, but it's three or four of you said it all at the same time. It's action, right? Because he just got done saying, bear fruit and show. Okay? Bear fruit, bearing fruit can show that we are his disciples. And that's part of the purpose of remaining in him. That's part of the purpose of obeying him, is to bear fruit. Now, does he anywhere in the passage tell us what this fruit looks like? Not in this passage. Okay? So now we have to look at what, when we get to the point where we would look at other verses. I'm just going to have you jot this one down. You may have already if you've thought about this, but just jot this one down. We're not going to look at it this morning. But Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. If you were to look at that, verse 22 starts off, but the fruit of the Spirit is. Oh, okay. Well, we've got a key word that spans books here, and maybe we can see. So, what's the fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. Very good. All right. There's nine parts of the fruit of the Spirit, and it's very interesting. And this is where I get off into what I find interesting, not necessarily what's in the text. What is very interesting is that in Galatians 5, Paul doesn't say the fruits of the Spirit are, but he says the fruit of the Spirit is. It is a singular fruit that manifests itself in multiple ways, in these different ways. Well, I grew up in Sunday school in a church, and one of the ways that I was taught how that differentiation was actually a cluster of grapes. Or, you know, it could be bananas, but anything that comes in a cluster, right? Because it is one bunch with lots of different parts to it. I just find it interesting that the fruit, and this is pure speculation on my part, but I find it interesting that a lot of times children and maybe even adults are taught the fruit of the Spirit by using a cluster of grapes, when Jesus here in John 15 is talking about a grapevine and bearing fruit that manifests itself in different ways. I looked at grapevines this week, just because that's part of what I do. Do you know how many different types of grapes there are out there? That's just crazy. Different colors and different sizes and different flavors and different sweetnesses and different uses. Different areas, different uses. Some of them are really, really good for making wines and some of them are not. Okay, some of them are very good for just eating right off the thing, and some of them should be cooked down and sweetened before you try to do it. There are all sorts of different types, and we haven't even left the grape family. Okay? This is just the grape family. All of these different sizes and flavors. And so what could bearing fruit look like for a Christian? Pretty much anything, right? Anything that fits within the context of remaining in me and remaining in my love and his words remaining in us and obeying his commandments. The application from that standpoint, there is no this you must do in order to. It's if you remain and I remain and we remain, then you're going to bear fruit. I'm not going to tell you what that looks like because it could be all sorts of different flavors and all sorts of different sizes and all sorts of different locations and all sorts of different uses and all sorts of different everything, just like grapes. You know what else I found interesting? Is that if I were to, I'm not going to, but if I were to decide to buy a grapevine, little, I don't know, sapling or whatever they call them, and plant it and start from scratch, just a little guy, it'd be a minimum of 2 to 4 years before I would see any fruit on that vine. Isn't that interesting? God allows time to grow to produce fruit. And I guarantee you that if I were to do that, that first crop would not be the biggest and sweetest and best ever, would it? It takes time. It takes time. The other thing I found out is that while some grapes are self-pollinating, even the self-pollinating grapes will do better if there's another grapevine nearby. Even the ones that are designed and genetically bred that they don't need other grapevines nearby to help pollinate them, if you do give them another one, they will do even better. Well, there's an application for Christians, isn't it? See, yeah, we do life together, and it's better, and we can bear fruit. By the way, all right, that's a different color. Okay, see, now I'm getting off. Here we go. Right. This is why we. All right. So the purpose, or at least one of the purposes, to bear fruit. All right, let's go off to blue because we're going to definitely run it. This is why we don't do this very often because we just do this. All right, that's right. Well, yeah, if you're colorblind, then you're looking at the whole thing. You're like, I don't know. All right, here we go. Blue. Now we're looking at verbs. Yay, verbs. Okay. All right. There's only two blue. What are the two blue things say? Remain in me. Remain in my love. Now, haven't we already said if we do these things? Now, there's a very specific type of verb he uses here. What type is it? It's an action, but it's a very specific action. Nathan? No. What? It's a command. It's an imperative. Okay. The reds, the word Nathan used was subjunctive, and we don't use that in English very much, but it is in there. And that is the red stuff. That's the contingency, this potential. Well, in the blue, Jesus isn't saying be potential anymore. He's saying do it. Okay? We can play with potentials all day long. We can play with contingencies and possibilities all day long, but that doesn't mean that something is necessarily going to happen. So he made sure that he sprinkled in a couple of this you must do. Now what, you're seeing how the way my brain works. I find it very interesting some of the things that he did not command. What are some of the things he did not command? Because it's just as important what he did say as what he didn't say, right? We're saying this. What did he not command? Take a minute. You don't have to rush. Just look through it. We've got all morning. I'm not going anywhere. In context, some of these important things that we pointed out, what are some of the things that he... I mean, he said, remain in me. He said, remain in my love. What did he not command as something that we are responsible for?
Obeying.
Okay. Obeying, maybe. I don't know if I would go there, but...
Staying away from him.
What did you... The result of the fruit. What the fruit turns out like. Let's play the hotter, warmer, colder game. You're getting warmer. For the one I'm thinking of. Okay, even warmer. All right. She said it's all about him loving us, not necessarily us loving back, Phil.
Well, Rose said that grapes are one of the hardest fruits to prune.
Okay. Okay. He didn't tell us to prune each other. We're really good at that, aren't we? Don't know what we're doing, but we're really good at chopping each other up. Good. All right, well, Becky? He didn't tell us to do what on our own? Bear fruit. And this is the one I was thinking of, and all these other ones are definitely possible. He never commanded us bear fruit. What did he command us? Remain in me. And we will bear fruit. Exactly. So we're getting. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? See, this is where religion comes in. When we decide we need to bear fruit, bear fruit, bear fruit. I have to produce love. I have to produce joy. I got to be a more patient person. I have to have more self-control. I have to. And we create this list. And what we do is we take Jesus' words and we shift the colors around a little bit. And we say, oh, look at all of these commands in here. Bear fruit, bear fruit, bear fruit. It's not what he said. What did he say?
Remain in me.
And if you remain in me, then you can bear fruit. And that is a very, very important distinction, I think. Very important distinction. We spend our lives so much, Christians, we spend our lives so much time trying to bear fruit and trying to force other people to bear fruit. Jessica? Okay. He didn't tell us necessarily what to do with this fruit or how to handle his fruit, right? He told us, your one responsibility is to remain. There's only one verb in here that's commanded, and that's remain, remain. We can remain in a couple of different places, but we must remain. Because if we don't, then all the rest of it comes off the table. There is no bearing fruit without remaining. There is no obeying without remaining. There is no showing that you're my disciples without remaining. There is none of this other stuff without remaining. We cannot let the cart get ahead of the horse. We have to remain. Now, we haven't unpacked what that means necessarily completely yet. But that's where we have to go. And if we don't do that, we've essentially thrown away everything else. It's important. Pat?
He's responsible for the fruit.
He is responsible. Yeah, exactly. Let's jump there because let me ask you this. We've already said that the purpose or the result is that we bear fruit, right? Is that the ultimate goal? Well, you have to give me more than no. You have to give me some. Is there a goal beyond bearing fruit in the text? Not your opinion. I don't care about your opinion, okay? Nobody cares about your opinion. You don't care about my opinion. It's not about opinions. Is there something in the text that says it goes beyond bearing fruit? Megan? Okay, showing you're my disciples, even more so. Faith is itching to answer. I'm not going to let her, though. Hold on. I think remaining is reciprocal, and so I think that is what we're supposed to do. I don't know that that's the ultimate goal. Okay? What's that? Yes! All right. Is that what you were going to say? She's like, of course I was going to say that. Yeah, absolutely. Look at verse 8, right? Now, it's not highlighted, which means we tend to skip over it. That's the problem with color coding, right? We jump straight to the color code, that you bear fruit and show that you're my disciples. But why are we bearing fruit and showing we're disciples? Because this is what honors my Father. That's the key. My Father is honored when you bear fruit. So is bearing fruit the final goal? No. Honoring and glorifying the Father is the final goal.
I was just wondering, isn't black one of your colors?
Yeah, everything else is black, and so that's just one of the color coding. Let's go back to verse 1. Okay, take a look at verse 1. Now, we sort of just skipped over this, not because it didn't matter, but because we needed to unpack a little bit further here. Now, verse 1 makes a whole lot is more important now. He said, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. Okay? This goes back to what you were saying, Rose, right? Who is the one who does the pruning? The Father does the pruning. In fact, let's take the whole thing. Who is the one who does the planting? Who is the one who does the caring? Who is the one who does the pruning? Whose field is it to begin with? Whose fruit is it? Who decided which fruit he wanted to plant? See? And who decides what he does with the fruit that he grew? See, it's all about the Father. It's all about honoring God. And when Jesus was here, he didn't even point to himself. He pointed to the Father. It's all about honoring God, specifically the Father from Jesus' standpoint. See, it's all about him. If we get stuck with, I got to bear fruit, we miss the big picture. It's not about bearing fruit. It's about honoring the Father, and this is how he decides, which means that if I do what I'm supposed to do and you do what you're supposed to do and we just remain connected to the vine, do we care what fruit we bear? Should we really care? No, because it's God's anyway. Should we care how God chooses to use it? Not at all. Not at all. See, at that point, it doesn't matter what happens because it's all of God anyway. And yet we get so focused on the fruit that we forget to remain and then we don't bear anything. See, it's an awful, awful downward spiral. Now, again, I've already given it to you, but having worked through this passage, what do you think would be the central or the key principle or the key verse to the whole thing? Hint, it's orange. Verse 5, let's take a look at verse 5. And interestingly, I don't know how it worked out this way. This is our memory verse, too. Amazing, amazing how that works. Verse 5, Jesus said, I am the vine, you are the branches. Now, there's all sorts of stuff in there. Tons of stuff right in there. Okay, here are just a couple of things because we're going to be running out of time here in a little bit. Just a couple of things. First of all, does the vine bear fruit by itself? No. The fruit grows on the branches. Okay? And so Jesus wants us out there bearing fruit, showing that we are his disciples. Can a branch bear fruit any kind that it wants? Nope, only what's given to it. Does the branch have everything that it needs to produce the fruit without being connected to the vine? No, because it all comes from the life of the vine. Okay? It all comes. Does every branch bear fruit? Unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, no. What does the gardener do? Okay? The gardener will cut it out. Will the gardener cut out a branch that doesn't bear fruit right away the first time? No. Remember, some varieties, even the best, the quickest varieties can take 2 to 4 years before they bear fruit. I mean, if of course, I don't know anything about grapes, really, you know, but if I came through, hey, why don't you have any grapes on? Start chopping stuff off. Maybe it just wasn't time for that yet, and the plant and the vine didn't produce it. See, but the Father knows. The Father knows what to expect and when to expect it. And he will not chop off any branch prematurely just because it's not bearing fruit. Interesting. A rockier, harder soil. Can we call that trials and tribulations and life produces a sweeter fruit? Because they have to dig deep, the roots have to dig deeper to find the good stuff. Interesting. Interesting. See, I don't know anything about grapes. I looked on it online this week. I mean, just that's very cool. Very cool. I am the vine, back on verse 5. You are the branches. The one who remains in me and I in him, there's that reciprocation, reciprocal there, bears much fruit because apart from me, you can accomplish nothing. You know what's really interesting? Is that doing is not the same as accomplishing, is it? We spend a lot of our lives doing, 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 doing. It can be lists, it can be rules, it can be all sorts of stuff. We can spend our lives extremely busy doing and never actually accomplishing anything because we're trying to be branches pushing out our own fruit without being connected to the vine. And without being connected to the vine, there's no life, there's no power, there's no anything, and you can't produce fruit if you're not connected to the vine. See, the word remain can be translated a lot of different ways. It can mean live, dwell, stay connected is a really, really good, broader translation of it. And from the illustration of the vine and the branches, I think that's probably the best one. See, what happens, and this I'm going to dig back into last week just a little bit, because last week we were talking about the sheep and the shepherd. And we referenced Isaiah 53, and we remember that all we like sheep, what? Have gone astray. We sing the song, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. You know what our natural tendency is? Is, I got this. I don't need to be connected. I got this. Jesus said, you may got this, and you may flop around and do a lot of activity, but if you're not connected to me, nothing is of value. There is zero value produced when we don't stay connected to the vine. But when we are connected to the vine, what we produce is all of God. And it doesn't matter what we come up with anyway. See, it's all about being connected. Now, here we go. Okay. Couple more things. I just want to spot hit these couple of things, then I want to show you these couple of verses here, and then we'll be done this morning. There's so much stuff in here. So much stuff that we didn't even scratch the surface on. Okay? He says all these ifs, right? If you remain, if you remain, if you remain. He gives a couple of benefits in here. You should study that out. You know, what are the benefits of remaining other than just bearing fruit? Okay, well, we didn't go there. Or what about some of the discipline if we don't remain? Well, we definitely didn't go there. And that's stuff that's in there worth studying out. One of the things that I observed just in my looking at this is in verse 1, he said, I am the true vine. In verse 5, he said, I am the vine. That's interesting, at least to me. He changed his language a little bit. That's worth seeing if there's anything there. But I want to show you this. In verse, let's just go through the verse 2. I see different crops coming. Verse 2, he takes every branch, takes away every branch that does not bear fruit. Some people don't bear fruit at all. He prunes every branch that bears fruit, that's a second group, so that it can
bear more
fruit is a third group. Verse 5, the one who remains in me and I in him, much fruit. There's another category of crops, and it's not in our notes, but if you want to look or jot down verse 16, Jesus says the goal, one of the goals in honoring the Father is to bear fruit that remains. So we have some, and this is honestly, this is all of us, and it goes through periods of our lives, and it goes through groups of people. No fruit, fruit, more fruit, much fruit, but ultimately we're looking for fruit that remains forever because that honors God. And we can be anywhere on that list depending on how closely we are connected to the vine. Now, at the end of Ephesians, the Apostle Paul wrote this in the very last verse of Ephesians, chapter 6, verse 24. He says this, grace be with all of those who love our Lord Jesus Christ with an undying love. That's an awesome benediction right there, isn't it? Grace be with all of those who love our Lord Jesus Christ with an undying love. And I wish we could leave it there, but there's a problem. I think that undying love is probably part of that connectedness, don't you think? Just staying focused on Him. Well, about 30 years later, Jesus wrote another letter to the church at Ephesus. We see this in Revelation chapter 2. And this is Jesus dictating this letter to the Apostle John. Paul wrote about 60 A.D. Jesus wrote about 90-95 A.D., so 30-35 years later. And he told the church at Ephesus, man, you're doing all this great stuff, and you're doing all this good stuff, and you got all these great actions. Look at Revelation 2:4. But I have this against you. You have departed from your first love. Man, you're doing so many good things. You've got so many programs going on. You've got so many good outreach. You've got so many missions. You've got so many small groups. You've got so many whatever. But you left your first love. Doing and accomplishing are not the same thing. Jesus said, Ephesus, you're doing a lot, but you're accomplishing nothing because you've left your first love. You are no longer remaining in me. And apart from me, you can accomplish nothing. This is why on the path, when we look at 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, we see that His divine power has bestowed on us everything necessary for life and godliness through the full knowledge or the rich knowledge of the One who called us by His own glory and excellence. We can spend our lives doing a lot. But man, if we don't stay connected to the vine, if we don't stay connected to Jesus, we're just spinning our wheels. We're not bearing fruit, and we're not honoring God the Father. And so as we bring this home, just a couple of things on the back of your connection card. I hope that you enjoyed this little bit of a different way of looking at the passage and tearing it apart a little bit. I could have told you all the same stuff, but it's a little bit more fun this way, maybe. Maybe not. You're not going to come back. I don't know. That's fine. You know, we're starting a brand new series. We won't do it this way next week. Starting a brand new series next week, Spaceship Church, and we're going to look at the church for a couple of weeks. But let me ask you this. Maybe you're like, you know, I've never connected to the vine. I've never placed my faith in Jesus Christ alone for forgiveness and salvation. I've never even given him any part of my life. I'm not even a branch yet because I've never connected to the vine. You would say, for the very first time today, I am placing my faith, I'm placing my trust and my belief in who he is, the eternal Son of God, and what he did on the cross on my behalf. And it may be a couple of years before I bear fruit, it may be whatever, but you know what? I don't have to worry about that. I just need to connect to the vine. And today, I am placing my faith in Jesus alone. I'd like you to put that on your connection card because it is just the first step of a lifelong journey, and I want to help you get started with that process. Not just say, yeah, I believe, and then just let it drop. It's bigger than that. For most of us, we know Christ as Savior. And so the challenge is simply this. Yeah, I know Jesus as Savior, but maybe it hasn't been a priority to stay connected to the vine. I get so busy with other stuff. I get so busy doing that I just forget to love Jesus and let him love me. Remain in him and he in me. And so maybe on your card you would say, I've not made it a priority, but I am committing to making my relationship with him my top priority. Because apart from me, apart from him, we can accomplish nothing. Let's have a word of prayer this morning. I hope it's been beneficial to you. I hope you've enjoyed this study. The whole I Am series is on our website. You can listen to that. And then we'll start a new one next week. Let's pray.